Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep.
Episode 5. The Nail. For the want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For the want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For the want of a horse, the rider was lost. For the want of a rider, the battle was lost. For the want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. And all for the want of a horseshoe nail. 13th century proverb. Part 1. Jim Corrigan took a deep breath, then coughed deep and hard. It wasn't just the cigarettes that made him cough sometimes, although he had been a 2-packs-a-day man for a while, but the air in Chicago had never been good. Even out here on Lakeshore Drive, he could still smell the coal smoke from the thousands of stoves, factory chimneys belching endless streams of soot, as well as the rich, coppery smell of blood from the Union stockyards when the wind was right. Sometimes he wondered why he kept living here, but he already knew the answer to that: his work. He'd been fighting hard to make detective, and he wasn't going to give it up for anyone or anything, least of all because the air was bad. Besides, he thought to himself as he turned his back to the lake and began walking back up the hill, Ginger wasn't about to leave. Her family was here. As much as he didn't really care for her father and mother, they were his family now, too, and although they were hardly the Rockefellers, they still had enough money to give Jim and Ginger a house as a wedding present. Jim had a feeling Ginger's father, the stiff and somehow weasel-looking Roger Alsberg, had done so to prevent the gossip magazines writing about his daughter living like a middle-class person in an apartment. God forbid, he thought, that the wealthy and the poor should rub elbows. Jim sometimes wondered if it was to spite her father that she had originally chosen him over her other suitors, or if it was because she'd been attracted to his force of will. He had met her in the hospital where she volunteered and where he had been sent to question a witness. In his mind, he could still replay the conversation they'd had.
"Nurse, I don't care if this guy is dead or dying. I need to talk to him right now."
"I'm telling you, the doctor's made very specific orders for this patient. He's not to be disturbed at any cost."
"I'm from Chicago PD. I'm not listening to some pill pusher. This mook has information on a shooting of one of our boys by the mob, and I need to speak to him."
"He's heavily sedated anyway, Detective. You can't even speak to him until it wears off in a few hours."
"Then I'll stay right here, outside the door, until he wakes up."
"That's a shame."
"Why is that?"
"I'm off in 20 minutes, and I was hoping you'd buy me a cup of coffee." Ginger hadn't needed to work in a hospital. Her parents had been wealthy, and she could have lived a life of leisure if she'd wanted to. She insisted, however, that working as a nurse meant something to her. It hadn't been a long courtship, and he supposed he was as far as he could be from the type of son-in-law her father had wanted. But he didn't care. They loved each other, and within a few months they were married and moved into their new house. Even though Jim didn't think much of the idea at first, the house was pleasant enough, after Ginger had put her own little touches on it, but he had insisted on a study for himself, At least there was one place in the house where she didn't have him clean up, and where it wasn't a horrible accident if he dropped his cigarette ashes on the floor. He didn't even allow the cleaning woman who came twice a week to enter the study. Whenever the ashtray was full, he'd empty it. And that was all.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
As he walked back towards the police station, he was thinking about the play she had bought tickets to. He liked the theater, although sometimes he felt like she would buy tickets for plays that went a little over his head. He hadn't been the best at school, and his idea of good literature was Mark Twain instead of Shakespeare, but he did enjoy musicals. This one was a Gershwin play called Let Him Eat Cake, and he'd teased her about that, saying that it was probably going to be about people like her father. He pulled his coat closer around himself to keep the cold out. Even though Chicago was freezing this time of year, he always took a walk on his lunch break, unless he was already out on a case. He needed to get out of the station, to stretch his legs and be outside of the office for a while. His fellow detectives and officers thought it was strange and had told him that one day he wouldn't make it back to the station. He'd just be found the next day, frozen like a popsicle, on the shore of Lake Michigan. As he walked up the icy steps to the police station, he spotted several cars parked in the lot next to it. Something had to be up, and when he made it inside, his suspicions were confirmed. The bullpen behind the reception area was filled with men in suits, all wearing hats and smoking cigarettes, chatting amongst themselves. Jim went to Detective Jacob Carlson, his partner, who stood in a corner and looked at the whole scenery with a grumpy look.
"What's going on?" he asked. "The feds are taking over. They're planning on doing some kind of big raid tonight or tomorrow, although I'd be surprised if anyone who wants to know doesn't already know about them by now. They park their cars right outside."
"Bunch of mooks." Jim shook his head.
"But what can you do, right? Why are they even here? Prohibition's over, so I thought."
"Not sure," Carlson said. "They're still keeping it close to the vest who they're after. But word is, they're looking for someone to take point."
Carlson raised his eyebrows at Jim.
"Someone local, just so you know."
"I'm not going to be point man. I'm on duty today and then I'm off tomorrow. I'm seeing a play tonight, that new Gershwin one."
"Aren't you the cultured one?"
Carlson lit another cigarette and gave Jim one. Jim took the cigarette and the light and drew deeply.
"I've got a mind to volunteer myself."
Carlson cocked his hat a little back on his head.
"Might mean a promotion. You know that after Perkins retired, there were Lieutenant Short upstairs."
"Really?"
Jim blew smoke and looked around at the men around him.
"Why would you get a promotion for helping the feds?"
"Showing initiative, maybe? Courage under fire? Dependability? I don't know. It was just a rumor I heard. Anyway, are you done with your midday constitutional? We got people to see downtown, unless you forgot."
Something inside Jim stirred. As he looked at the federal officers, he couldn't help but think there was something he was supposed to remember. Something about a federal agent he had once known. But then again, that was probably just a dream. He had never had more than a 10-word conversation with any federal agent.
"Yeah, let's go. I'll drive."
The two men went back down the icy steps and into the cold, and as they drove away through the falling snow, Jim again felt his mind insist that there was something there, some faint memory of an agent. He couldn't remember, though, and decided to put it out of his mind.